Well, let's read about this first tragedy. Let me read chapter 34, verses 1 through 7. Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to visit the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he took her and lay with her by force. He was deeply attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the girl and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this young girl for a wife." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter, but his sons were with his livestock in the field, so Jacob kept silent until they came in. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. Now the sons of Jacob came in from the field, and when they heard it, and the men were grieved, they were very angry because he had done a disgraceful thing in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done. Tonight, I just want to tell you, this passage, this is one of those passages where it's really sort of a weird story. Later on in Genesis 38, we're going to come to another one similar to it when Judah ends up, anyway, that's a whole other nightmare. These passages are really very, very important. And I didn't put this in my notes, but I do want to go ahead and say it now before I forget. There is a tradition in Judaism that there is a daughter that is born from this union that is not mentioned. And again, this is just tradition. But the tradition is that the daughter is sent away by Jacob to Egypt to get her away from the scorn, because the sons just couldn't live with her. And her name was Asenath, and she is in fact the one that eventually Joseph will marry in Egypt. Now that's just an interesting tradition. I can't prove it, but the sages are always, every story they see is having a connection, and so they draw this connection. What I want to do is I just want to make some quick application points, and then at the end try to talk a little bit about the more prophetic nature of this. Verse 1, the verse literally says that she went out to see the daughters of the land. Now there are a lot of points that I could make about not getting too close to the wicked. And quite honestly, it would be easy to preach on this and to harass and harangue about Dinah's poor judgment and all of this. But the bottom line is that far too often I am just as guilty about being way too interested in the world. No matter what her intentions, innocent or not, guys, the bottom line is when you play next to the fire, you're going to get burnt. Now, the sages have traditions that Shechem sent dancing girls with timbrels and all sorts of things to coax her out so that he could, you know, make off with her and all this stuff. I don't know if any of that happened, but I do know that the verse implies that Dinah wanted to see something. Now, it doesn't tell us what her motives are, but it does tell us that she went out with the intention to see the daughters of the land. And when I was reading this, quite honestly, I was grieved in my own heart. Because there's too many examples that come too easily in my own life where I find myself infatuated with the world, where I don't guard my eyes, where I'm willing to go see, hey, what's going on over there, or what are they doing? And, you know, when I was growing up, my mom used to try to tell me, you know, don't go to those parties and don't go here, don't go there. And I used to make the excuse, well, if I'm not doing anything, what's the problem? Eventually, guys, if you play by the fire, you're going to get burnt. And if you are infatuated with what this world has to offer, eventually it will go beyond looking. And your intentions may be pure. You may be out there, you know, thinking, well, I'm not in this situation because I'm wanting to participate. But guys, eventually Satan's going to make off with you. You just have to be wise. And as I was reading this particular story, there were just so many things, just common sense things that I know that you know, but I feel like I need to hear them, and hopefully you'll understand that you need to hear them too. Verse 2, Shechem is called the prince of the land. Now, he is obviously named after the city which is there, and it may very well have been that his father Hamor may have actually founded that city. Guys, we have seen this event before. In Genesis chapter 6, before we are told of the story of the flood, we are told that the sons of God went out and took wives from whomever they wanted. And there are some who say, you know, we won't go into the debate tonight, that these were fallen angels. Others say no, that the terminology can actually be applied to the sons of the leaders, which would make them princes. That these were the children of privilege who were abusing the privilege and going out and taking whoever they wanted to be their wife. Regardless of how you interpret Genesis chapter 6, the bottom line is this. The Bible is making it very clear that when mankind chose to step across the boundary lines of how you go about taking a bride, it brought the whole world into chaos. It brought the whole world into judgment. And it didn't do much for the city of Shechem, as we're going to read. When one guy messes up and brings down the whole house on himself. Notice verse 4. After defiling Dinah, Shechem knew he could not legally have her until she was given in marriage. You know, as I read through this, you know, my modern day mentality is, okay, here's a kid and he's all broken up and he's done something wrong. But the more you read the story, there's a whole lot that's not there that if you go back and you really read it, don't be too quick to feel sorry for the boy. One thing you will not find anywhere in this passage is an apology. In fact, the real truth about what happened to her isn't even discussed by him or by his father. But at least he understands that he's never going to have her legally until she is given to him in marriage. And I was thinking about this. You know, this guy made a lot of mistakes, but at least he knew enough to get his father involved in finding his bride. So let me get real parental with you. I remember one time we were at a camp, and we had split the kids, guys and girls, into different groups, and we were doing the big talk day. And I really didn't know what the lady was going to say to the girls, but she absolutely freaked them out because she made it sound like your parents have the right to choose your mate. And this just created all sorts of an uproar. And when the kids came to me and they asked me, well, what do you think about that? This was my response. No, I do not believe your parents have the right to choose your mate. But I think you are absolutely foolish if you discount their counsel in the process. You know, sometimes, guys, your moms see things that you don't see because women know women. And sometimes, guys, dads can see things in you you don't want to admit about your motives and your priorities. Does it sound foolish to think about giving somebody else the right to pick my bride in this day and age? Yeah, that may sound foolish, but let me tell you what's more foolish. You going out and trying to do it without the godly counsel of your parents. All right? So even though it's sort of taking a positive from a negative here, I just want to stress, because of where you guys are at in life, guys and girls, if you really want to find the right spouse, you better get your father involved. You better get your heavenly father involved, and you better start praying for that person now, and you better start submitting to how God says you find a godly spouse. Notice in verse 5 that when Jacob finds out about this, he keeps silent. Why? Well, sometimes you just have to wait. You just have to wait and allow things to work themselves out. You know, this is very frustrating to me, and as I look out in the world and I see all this sin and I see all this wickedness, I mean, have you ever felt like, you know, God, what are you doing? You know, why aren't you doing something? Have you ever felt that way? Why don't you intervene and do something? And then he does. And then what's our reaction? Well, jeepers. I didn't know you were going to tsunami the place. I mean, come on. That's a bit harsh. Do we really want justice? You know, it's easy to say, gosh, I really wish God would come take care of the sin problem. But you know what? If God ever really stepped up and took care of the sin problem in America, most of us wouldn't have a social life left. We wouldn't have any entertainment to watch. Our lives would be pretty different, wouldn't they? Jacob is not sitting there being silent because he doesn't intend to do something. But he's biding his time till his sons come home. Notice verse 6. Then Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. Nowhere in the conversation is there an apology. And by the way, why hadn't the citizens of Shechem punished Shechem? Now, I think most of you are probably familiar with the story that we're going to finish the story, and the city of Shechem is about to get toasted bad. I mean, in a violent way. And you might think, well, that's not fair. What I want you to think about is, really, who is responsible for governing and keeping justice in a society? Is it not that society? They knew what he'd done, but there was no apology, and there was no justice. And later on, the sons of Israel are going to make it very clear that the city was complicit to the crime.